A goal line stand by that long gray line as the brave old Army team survives. Jaden Daniels brings home the Heisman Trophy, and Pete Thamel enjoys a game as a fan. This is the College Game Day podcast for Monday, December 11th. Reese Davis and Pete Thamel with you. So, Pete, I've got to ask you, did you enjoy the game sitting in the stands watching Army-Navy?
Reese, it was awesome. Like, what a day. So, you know, this is year 20 for me covering national college football, my first Army-Navy game. So there just aren't a lot of firsts left, which is not a complaint. It's a life's dream fulfilled. But it's always one of those things where early in my career I'd be at the Heisman, or you're just flat out exhausted from the season. Also worked a lot of East Coast publications where the game usually was, so I didn't really need to jump there because we would have personnel on the ground. So when the stars aligned, I live in Boston, for Army-Navy to be at Gillette, I called in a favor to the great Lindsay Lloyd, who deserves all the hat tips, and she got 5 tickets. I went with my wife, Kate, and some of her friends, one of whose husband is in Iraq and actually watched game day on Saturday morning, Andy Morrissey. He's a pod listener, and Steph actually held up a sign to Andy that got on the air. So that was a highlight. He sent a screenshot back that he saw it, which was really neat. And then, spent a few hours, Reese, aimlessly wandering the parking lots, having an occasional cold beverage and a bite to eat, which I'll tell you this, you and I are often swept out of these like great scenes, right? The tailgate tents as far as the eyes can see in Tuscaloosa, you know, a hot day in Texas with brisket going, you got deep fryers at LSU, and we're wearing ties up right up to our Adam's apple. And either we're going to cover the game, or we're bouncing to get ready for next week. So there is a lot of FOMO. Now, we love our jobs, but there are some days where I'm like, man, wouldn't it be bad to go sit and eat some brisket and have a couple beers and watch the noon games and then go in at 3:30. And that doesn't sound like a bad day. So I got to have that day on Saturday, and it was great. The everything about Army Navy lived up to it. The pageantry was awesome, right? Just the flyovers, the parachuters landing with awesome precision. I mean, it was just like goosebumps just everywhere. And I think my takeaway outside of the football was how much that game meant to everyone in the stands, like that in those communities. That is their Super Bowl. And you could feel that teaming passion, which is just as, you know, robust as Auburn, Alabama, or Notre Dame, USC, or Ohio State, Michigan. It's just in a different form and setting. So wouldn't you say
the difference is, though, I agree with you 100%, having been there, the passion, the intensity, the desire to win the game and beat your rival is on par with any of those great rivalries you mentioned. But the difference in the aftermath to me is that there's disappointment, but not anger. You know, at least among the fans. Did you sense that too?
Yes. They're going to stay and watch you sing second. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go kill the old tree on your square with tree poison, right? Like that. It is great. And there's a lot of talk of, you know, the other 364 days, we're all sort of brothers at arms, different, but on the same mission. But just even like the back and forth in the crowd, like this isn't like Red Sox Yankees, you know what I mean? Nobody's saying Army sucks or Navy sucks. Like there is a baseline respect for, you know, everything, everyone, you know, there's a sort of a shared experience, even though it's different. And then you see the wives, you see the families, you could see it sort of touching everybody involved. So I was, really fired up to go, really grateful for the experience. And it was just a great day of football.
You know, I noticed, and I could be wrong about this, but I don't think that behind the set that we had the net up that we do occasionally or most every week. Because, I mean, who better to stand guard back there than the Corps and the Brigade? And they had the clever signs, the one we posted on social media from a cadet at West Point that said, you know, if Maverick had gone to West Point, Goose would still be alive. And there's one that there's one that makes its way to game day at Army Navy every time we've been there. That, you know me, I chuckle at the simple ones. I, you know, week in, week out, I usually laugh at the SpongeBob signs, no matter how many times I've seen them. But the one that simply says, Army swims in the shallow end, makes me laugh every time. I don't know. I mean, it's just like simple. It, you know, it's insulting, but it's still kind of in the spirit of those two great institutions.
Yeah. So since I slinked off to the parking lot to get my afternoon going, I didn't see you after the show, Reese. I would be really curious. I was touched on the set by how much Bill Belichick had an affinity for Lee Corso. Yeah. And people had sort of spoken about it, and I'd heard a bit of the history and saw Coach get teared up when they showed those highlights of a young Lee Corso. I watched those a bunch. I mean, gosh, that was really cool. But I was curious what it was like up there with Bill there. And I imagine that was palpable. You could feel it.
No doubt about it. Bill has such a great appreciation for the history of the game. He has such a reverence for Navy because of the time that his father spent there as an assistant coach and a scout, and because of the fact that Bill grew up there. And, you know, watching, you know, he remembers vividly going and watching Lee run drills when Lee was a position coach. And, you know, the story he told that tied in with the video that we showed, which I told the story on the air. The video, I recall vividly. We were doing a story on Navy, and one of our production assistants was on site, I think, going through some of the archive video that Navy had. And this was pure happenstance that they stumbled on that video that we've now shown a few times on game day over the years, with Lee talking and Lee coaching and being interviewed and then being thrown into the water. And then, you know, we debated on Friday about, you know, I brought up, I said, should we maybe roll that video when Bill's up there? And we ultimately decided not to, but Bill had seen it before and then saw it before he came on set and then referenced it and told a story about it, about his dad telling LC that water's getting colder, it's getting colder, Lee, you know. And it was just, you know, he has such an appreciation, love, and passion for the game as a whole and for Navy particularly. And to see that side of him, it was really cool. I had a hunch that we were going to get something similar to that, because Kirk and I called the Navy BYU game the opening game of 2020. You know, BYU ripped them pretty good, and Bill came on the phone and talked about Navy football. And, you know, because his season was about to start at that time, and, you know, we thought, well, maybe we'll get a couple questions with him. We just appreciate him being on. And he starts telling stories, and he starts talking about Navy football. And, you know, it was he stayed on through an entire drive, got to a commercial break that I had to go to break. Bill Bunnell, the great game producer, is going, Reese, we have to go to break. And in my mind, I'm going, Bill Belichick's here talking. Yeah. And so I just said, you know, Bill, would you stay through the break? And he's like, sure. And he stayed through the break, and he came back and talked. It was phenomenal. And I thought we would get that, and it delivered. And the fact that he brought out the old school looking headgear and put it on. I mean,
was that a surprise to you?
Oh, yeah. I had no idea he was going to. I saw him reaching for something when we got there, and it looked like he was having trouble getting something out from under the desk. I'm like, what? You know, maybe he's going to give Coach something or something of that sort. And he pulled, it was a great, great moment. Very, one of the more memorable celebrity guest picker moments that we had. And I also think that all of us collectively, you were involved in the discussion, you know, me, you, Pat, Desmond, Michelle Rosenhaus, who produced the show for us, Matt Garrett, our coordinating producer. And I was really pleased that we all came to the thing, because in the end of not picking a whole bunch of games with Bill Belichick sitting there, not doing it the same way. And Bill didn't want to pick a lot of the early bowl games. He didn't want to do that. And the fact that we said, you know what, we're good. There'll be time to talk about those other bowl games. We've got Bill Belichick on here with Lee Corso to talk about, you know, this rivalry, football in general. You got the greatest coach, and as Pat said, greatest general manager in the history of the sport sitting right there. And so why not take that 5, 6, 7 minutes, however long it lasted, and have some fun and let him tell stories and let him interact with LC. And it was just extraordinarily memorable. One thing I wanted to ask him, though, next time I see him, I'm going to ask him this. They have the Belichick collection. I think it's on the third floor of the Navy football building, which basically yep. is like every football book you can imagine, you know, dating back to the early days to more modern autobiographical or biographical type selections. I'd like to ask him, if you were going to send someone into the Belichick collection and just, you know, sit down, where should they start? What would be the first book you'd have them pull out? I had it ready. You know, we had to start broader, and then we got up against time. We ended up killing some sound that we were going to run and lead in and stuff, just because it was good and fun, and Michelle made a great decision to, you know, just ride with it. But I'd love to know that. If, you know, where would you start? You know, where should you start in the Belichick collection reading about football? It was
So a little color from behind the scenes. So when Bill came up to the set, he was with Berge Najarian, who's kind of been his longtime consigliere. And so I went over and said hello quick. Been around them a little bit just over the years, dropping in to Foxborough for different things. And Bill just wanted to talk about, we talked about college football. And that was fun. You know, we talked about, so he's with his daughter, Amanda, and his granddaughter. Amanda's the head lacrosse coach at Holy Cross. And I had met her going to see Bob Chesney this spring. So we chatted about Bob, and Bill was just like, oh yeah, I talked to Bob last night. And then started going, just talking about the carousel, different people and stuff. So that was just fun. Bill Belichick's just a guy, loves football. And, you know, it was neat to have a few minutes and just sort of banter some things back and forth with him. I'm going to make a bold prediction, Reese, that the Belichick, what was it, a 1963 or 9 helmet that he put on?
I'm not sure. I don't recall exactly the year. Might have been 63 from the Staubach era. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, and there was a special tie to it that it didn't stick with me when he said it. Yeah, but either, I predict that helmet will live a long time on game day highlight montages.
Oh, no doubt. If that's not in the open next year and they're coming to your city open, Belichick putting on the old Navy helmet, it's tremendous.
Those decisions are all above my pay grade. But when that happened, I was like, yes, we will see that for years to come. And that is, especially the way it manifested itself so organically. And I think the cool takeaway I had was that he appreciated, understood, and then adopted to the spirit that Coach has brought to the show. Does that make sense, Reese?
Yes.
He's clearly watched the show for all 3+ decades, and he clearly knew that moment wasn't about talking about ways to bear fronts can stop option offenses. it was we're going to have a little – we're going to reflect on the game we love, and we're going to have a little bit of fun. And that was just – it was chef's kiss by Bill.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Weekend Review is brought to you by Dr. Pepper. It ain't college football season without the delicious taste of an ice cold Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. After that, later on that night, as expected, I think Jaden Daniels won the Heisman Trophy from LSU.
Pretty close, though.
It was a little closer than I anticipated. And I think the one thing that you see from that, and I don't mean to make Michael Penix supporters wistful, but you know, and there is still speculation that maybe he's been gutting it out for a while. Might be a little healthier when Texas comes around. But had maybe continued on the trajectory that he appeared to be on after that Oregon game and not had those games where they were still fine, you know, with the exception of Arizona State, but not elite. I think he might have won the Heisman Trophy. But Jaden Daniels, don't misunderstand, Jaden Daniels had one of the great statistical seasons in recent memory, and was most deserving of the Heisman for sure.
Yeah. Do you feel comfortable talking about who you voted for, Reese?
Yes. I mean, it's not a big secret. I voted for Jaden. We are under no charge, and you vote too, correct?
I do, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yep. And, you know, they ask us not to reveal our vote.
Yeah, before.
Until after. Yeah, I voted. Yeah. I voted in order of finish.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Right. So I voted that way. I struggled with really 2, 3, and 4 because the other guy up there was the guy that I considered, because I've said it a few times on the air. I'm not so sure that Marvin Harrison isn't, you know, the best football player, you know. So he was worthy also, but I think to win the Heisman Trophy as a wide receiver, you have to have overwhelming numbers and moments. Like Devontae Smith did in 2020.
Ooh, did he?
And I think even Larry Fitzgerald, who finished second, as I recall, probably had a season worthy of the Heisman, didn't win. So it's a difficult task to win it from that position. But I ended up voting 1, 2, 3. I voted Daniels, Penix, Bo Nix.
So I stared at my ballot for a long time for one, and I ended up on Penix.
Did you?
And some of it was that, you know, we saw some of Penix's struggles a little later in the year at post Oregon. And there was a bit of a numerical swoon. No one can argue that. I've just felt like Daniels's swoon came the first week and we just forgot about it. Is that
fair?
That makes sense. Like, so again, they're both great. Like this isn't, I don't have this like from the mountaintop conviction, but the totality of what Penix did, and then he did it without McMillan, that, you know, his swoon, was not a coincidence that McMillan was out for basically that entire time, or played two plays in some of those games or whatever. So, again, he has to be the most outstanding player, but found a way to will his team to that undefeated season. So, didn't have a ton of conviction about that, but yeah, it was a lot of years. The Heisman ceremony is anticlimactic. I at least like went into the day thinking Penix had a chance to win. I thought Jaden Daniels was going to win. He was clearly the favorite, but I didn't think it was like this no brainer from the, you know, just like some years when you're like, oh gosh, that guy has just rolled everybody over.
It's been recently, in recent years, best team, best player on the best team. Now we've had 2 years in a row where we've had guys who were not involved in the college football playoff. And, you know, Caleb Williams was only a game away from likely being involved in the college football playoff last year. Daniels was farther away than that. that phenomenon might be different going forward in the expansion era because, you know, Daniels would not have made it this year, but it would have he would have been close to the cut line if things fell the same. And you often wonder too, and I think there's a lot of diligence that goes in as the committee goes down the list, because as we've done these mock exercises in the past, a lot of times you end up spending more time because it's harder to discern who's a little bit better at, you know, 12, 13, 14, you know, because the resumes are and the team on the field are also similar. And you wonder if you have a transcendent player, as Daniels proved to be this year, when you're starting to talk about a playoff spot, whether that enters into the football judgment component of the committee as they look forward. But I do think that all things considered, more times than not, you're not going to have as often guys out of the playoff mix who are accepting that trophy on Sundays. Maybe you will. Maybe you'll have a Barry Sanders type season for a team that's not a contender and they win the Heisman Trophy. But I think more times than not, you're going to have teams involved in the playoff. And the last 2 years, anyway, we haven't had that.
Yeah, I'd be pretty. That's a great point. Just on how the paradigm of being a, you know, contender and a finalist is going to change. I believe, Reese, I read a stat: 5 of the last 7 Heisman winners were transfers.
That's true.
Which I thought was interesting. So, If I can veer us off Heisman for a minute, but stay tied to it some, and kind of go to the other big story right now, which is I think the quarterback transfer portal that's ripping and roaring. I thought this was a really interesting point this week, and I thought it was something we could dig into a little bit here. Eli Drinkwitz made this point when looking at basically who was available last year as kind of one and done quarterbacks and who's available in other years. And he said Penix, Jaden Daniels, and Bo Nix all took a full season before they really unlocked in their offenses. So they all had good early seasons and then elite second seasons. And then Joe Burrow obviously is the archetype for the good but not great first season in there. Now, Caleb Williams was great right away. No one's going to argue that. But obviously no one's going to argue that he's one of the more talented guys that we've seen there in a while. And then you look at, and I wrote this, you look at Sam Hartman at Notre Dame, Devin Leary at Kentucky, Brennan Armstrong at NC State, to some extent Tanner Mordecai at Wisconsin. He had some injuries. But like a lot of these guys who we spent a lot of energy and oxygen talking about last January, February, that were going to, you know, come in and change these programs, were good. We're solid. Some were disappointing. But they weren't these paradigm changers. I just kind of curious your thoughts on that. Like I think it's an interesting big picture. Do you still need to develop at that position, even though the parameters of how you can enter it have changed?
I think the answer is yes for almost everybody. We were at College Game Day in Baton Rouge, Burrow's first season at LSU. I saw a Joe Burrow quarterbacked LSU team score 0 points. 0 points. That seems that seems unfathomable.
Against who? Bama?
Against Alabama.
Wow.
The second year, no one could stop them. And the change from, it just so happened that I also went to went and spent some time at LSU practice the following year, Burrow's second year. Went down and spent a day there. I was going to call the LSU Texas game early in the season, so I went to Texas and went to. Went to LSU for, you know, during fall practice or some late summer practice. And you watch them in practice and you're like, huh, this is, you know, this looks a little different than what I saw. Now they had Joe Brady and, you know, that was the summer that all the receivers committed to catch thousands of balls and all of that stuff. But it looked way different. Then the Texas game looked different and Joe Burrow looked different. And some of it is the fact that he's a great player. Some of it's the fact that he probably had a more an offense more suited to him. But a lot of it was that he had another year. He had a second year with those guys and in his surroundings. And I think there is a ton to it. And Caleb Williams, as talented as he is, he at least was coming with the same coach, the same philosophy, you know, big time players coming with him. So that accelerates the learning curve a little bit.
Obviously, yeah.
But I think, man, you know, I think you're better off, if you can, developing your guy. Now, if you can get, if Ohio State or Alabama or somebody have been able to, although it worked out pretty well for both of them anyway, if they've been able to convince Drake May to, you know, come with them, okay, go ahead. That's different. But the other guys are all really good players that you mentioned. They might not be plug and play ready to go, and I think you're better off recruiting well, convincing your guys that the Carson Beck model of patience can pay off for you. I mean, you know, Beck could have gotten mad, you know, when when Stetson Bennett was given the start ahead of him. Kept practicing, kept getting better, and now he's a dude. You know, and so I think that's the better way if you can, because more times than not, there's some bumps in the road when you try to plug and play the quarterback, because it's not just the position, it's the leadership involved. And you can come in the summer, and we hear these stories every year. The guy comes in, everybody has gravitated to him enough, and they vote him captain, but that's probably in part, not to cast aspersions toward the guy, but that's probably in part because the team knows he needs to be that, you know, and, you know, it's, you know, a first year guy coming in, getting that honor. It's almost like they're pushing, saying, you have to do this for us. And sometimes it takes a little time.
Yeah, like Russell Wilson worked like that. Like, you know, like nobody has worked. And he was a captain a few days after getting to campus and all that. But turns out he's pretty special, right? Like they're, you know.
I called his first game in Camp Randall. And it was like, I mean, I'd called his games at NC State too. Sure. But doing that first game against UNLV, it was like, okay, Wisconsin now has a different kind of threat back there. They'd had good quarterbacks, but not like that. Yeah.
No, and it's in this. I don't bring this up to criticize the players who are in the portal as much as these schools pinning their hopes on something that could be fleeting, right? Like you everything has to come together and land in a very quick period of time, and that's hard.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Best in Game is brought to you by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises. And the promise of finding a quarterback. And look, we love coaches. We get to talk to them and everything. We see different sides of them from time to time. But a coach can fall in love with the guy that he hasn't coached yet, and sometimes, you know, find the zit on the Mona Lisa with the guy that's been in his building for a couple of years. It's human nature, you know. It's a shiny new something over there, and it's a difficult task. And then there's also the component of being afraid you're going to lose a guy, or being afraid you're going to wind up without any depth at the position too. And it's because it's a unique position in sports, right, Pete? I mean, you can't.
Oh yeah.
You know, sure. you can't move. And if you have two great center fielders, you move one of them to left. He's got a great arm. He can play center, but you can move him to right. Get him in the lineup. A receiver you can rotate in. A running back you can split carries. Quarterback doesn't work that way. So I don't mind these guys looking for other opportunities. I mean, at all. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of times some of them hurt their own development, and also the teams become a little bit disappointed when it doesn't happen instantaneously. And when you look in the NFL, young quarterbacks that change system, doesn't work. You know, it rarely works. And the same thing can happen to a quarterback who keeps hopping and looking for the next job.
Yeah, I remember Alex Smith, who I got to know when he was at Utah, had like 5 OCs his first 5 years or something crazy like that. And the only guy that he really ended up playing well for early in his career is Harbaugh, who did a nice job with him. And then ultimately ended up replacing him, right? But there was just – it was – who was the Bears linebacker who was the head coach?
Mike Singletary.
Yeah, that didn't work out well. And there was just a big churn at that position. But again, it's development is development. You have to develop at every level, and you need consistency has to be part of your development plan. Like, you can't just churn people in, churn people out, and expect the growth to be there. Both at the high school level, college level, NFL level, like there's always development that has to be had. And I feel like in this portal era, that aspect gets overlooked more than anything.
So what do you sense right now? Are coaches still as eager to find that guy? Now, you've had the number of guys that you mentioned, several of them had, difficult seasons. Some had good, not great seasons. Mm-hmm. Some like Leary, for instance, played much better toward the end than he did early. What do you sense from coaches in terms of pursuing quarterbacks as opposed to developing the guys that they have now?
Well, I think they'd love to develop them, but the problem is, look at like Brock Vandegrift going from Georgia to Kentucky. If the opportunity isn't there, the market demands that you go. And I have no idea how much money Brock Vandegrift got, but he was a former high-end recruit with a ton of talent. And if you're going to go start in the SEC, you're going to probably make 6 mid-figures. That's an estimate by me. I don't have receipts on that. So not only do you not want to wait, and I guess that move is made with the assumption Carson Beck is coming back. And I've heard he's at least like taking a look at the agent world and, kick some tires and was doing so at the end of the year. You don't, you don't stick around and wait on a normal plane anymore because you have the ability to transfer without sitting, right? Because it used to be, well, why would I leave? I just sit one more year here and then I can start here. Whereas now it's like, well, I can go start and change my paradigm there. So I think coaches want the control, Reese, right? That's really what it comes down to. They don't say to me, Pete, we want the control, but they don't want to be able to lose guys as quickly. They don't want to have to re-recruit their entire roster. I've heard a dozen times in the last week, retention is the biggest challenge right now. Retention is the biggest challenge right now because that means they have to go scare up the NIL money for the 18th best player on the roster who's 24-year-old NIL guy is telling him that he can get him a $60,000 deal if he goes in the portal. And this guy's only getting $20,000 at a mid-level ACC program or whatever. So the retention piece and just the constant attention that retention demands is a struggle because there is no, in theory, linear mechanism to pay these guys, right? You don't have like cap space and you don't have that. Like guys come in the office and say, hey, one coach said something funny to me. He said, there's no secrets in the locker room. There's no, like, everyone's like, there needs to be transparency. He's like, everybody knows to the dime what everyone else is making in the locker room, which makes total sense if you know team dynamics at all. So once somebody goes in and gets X amount of money, someone else is going to roll in. Like, the kids talk to each other. The agents talk to each other. The parents talk to each other. Like, it's a whole, you know, it's a whole big it's information sharing, which is positive, right? Like, I want these guys to get their value and get what their and get what they're worth. But for coaches, it is a frustrating proposition to retain.
And we'll see who can get the right one. It's about finding the right fit and, you know, making sure that you have the right team dynamics, because you can throw off your dynamics too if you bring in a guy. Everybody in the locker room knows he's making a lot of money, and then maybe he struggles to adjust. Maybe he feels the heat of making a lot of money and starts pressing a little bit to try to make it work. And you know, it's part of the professionalization of college football, which has been in place for a long time. It was just conducted in a much different manner than the manner in which everybody knows it right now. You know, one thing I wanted to bring up when we were talking about game day, because obviously the Army-Navy thing is a completely different dynamic from what we're talking about with transfer quarterbacks. And even them, you know, talking to Jeff Munkin and some of the offensive changes that Army made, and as they try to mesh a little shotgun system with the under center stuff that they've done so well for so long, you know, they're going to the American. He and I were talking about recruiting and different things of that nature. And he said, look, we're still going to get the same guys we're going to get. But he said, you know, I'm not going to lie. I thought there's a guy trying to decide and we let him throw it a little bit more. You know, maybe it'll help us, you know, but he said, basically you're going to wind up with the same guy. So it's a different dynamic there. But we had guests at the show Saturday morning. We had Taylor and Sarah in person joined us. Hopefully we rolled out the red carpet for them. So what did you guys think? Is that the first time you guys have been on? I know it is with us, but is it the first time you've been on site for game day in your lives, or have you been there before?
I went to college game day in 2016 for Army Navy in Baltimore. Yeah, covered it for my guys, the Solid Verbal, did the Radio Row thing, and then caught the show in the Inner Harbor, which was a great setting, but we had an awesome time. Yeah,
so cold. It was so cold that day. It was a great setting, but the wind was, whipping in their big time.
And that was the when Army ended the streak, and I got to get on the field, and the place was jumping. So Pete, I feel you. Like that energy is different. You've never experienced it before. It's a lot of fun.
What did you think of the flyovers? Like, that's what I'll remember 10 years from now. The aerial pageantry.
Those guys that when they parachute into the stadium, that is nuts. Oh. Like, truly, I'm like, I can't relate to those guys, and it's remarkable what they do.
Yeah. Well, you see them leave the plane. Like, the plane flies over, they narrate it, and then you see them leave, and you're like, there's no, and then you're like, oh. And then it's like 30, 35, 40. It's like, whoa, that's bonkers.
I have a cousin, my first cousin, Jeff Steele, who was a member of the Golden Knights parachute teams when the Army has over 3,500 jumps. He actually came to the show at James Madison, as he's, you know, retired in this where he lives now. But I often, you know, would joke with him, why would you jump out of a perfectly good airplane? But he was into it. I didn't get to meet Grammy this weekend, but I did meet Sarah's mom, and she was loaded up, ready, shows that I'm predictable in my questions, and she absolutely had the perfect retort for me, did she not, Sarah?
Oh my gosh, she was practicing that answer for so long. She was like, I'm so ready. I hope they ask me about basketball.
Yeah, okay, so tell them what I asked and what your mom said.
So Reese asked, what are we going to do about Nebraska? And my mom, without hesitating, without skipping a beat, goes, what do you mean? We're in the Final Four. We're a volleyball school now.
That was perfect. Your mom, and was it your aunt too that was?
No, it was Marissa's aunt, I think.
Yeah, Marissa's aunt was there. Who, didn't your mom have someone else with her, Sarah, or not?
No, it was just her and I. Okay. I had surgery earlier this week, so she was in town to help take care of me.
Okay. Well, your mom was delightful. It was great to meet her, and she was. It was great to have you guys with us. So you have to do that more often.
Yeah.
What is the Big Red status in the postseason now? Forgive me for not keeping up.
We're in the Final Four. They are headed to Tampa. They play December 17th, and Patty and Grammy will both be in attendance. So they are very, very excited.
Hey, Pete, listen, she was breaking down to me the number of freshmen that Nebraska volleyball starts. And so this dynasty is just going to...
You got a burgeoning dynasty.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
All right. I bet they have great volleyball NIL there.
Oh, like, yes.
Some setter from Long Beach State's about to get a bag dropped.
Lexi Rodriguez, our libero, I believe she has a deal with Adidas. Like, they're doing great. They're doing great.
And if you have any trouble there with the NIL, with the volleyball stuff, let me know. I'll get Trev Alberts on the case and see if we can get that fixed. There. Oh, man. No, it was great to meet him. Taylor, did anything from the standpoint of watching the show as you did behind the scenes, and I don't know if you went in the truck or not, what anything strike you about the way the show's pulled off from that?
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, I got Lindsay Lloyd, Ryan, Rachel, I mean, absolute rock stars behind the scenes. I'm so thoroughly impressed by that. They're just buzzing around the whole time, and I'm just a lowly podcast producer who sits in a chair all day. So to see them hustle was pretty cool. But also the whisking of you guys in and out of places is pretty impressive. You know, I saw Pat McAfee get handed the keys to a getaway car. Reese, I was hoping to say goodbyes, but you literally had a police escort to get out of there. So I was like, okay, I'll see you guys on Monday. So that was pretty fun. And then I really enjoyed how Pete just is bouncing around, you know, behind the scenes. And Pete is a master networker. And when Bill Belichick showed up, I knew our guy would be there to shake hands and say hello.
Yeah. It's soon next year when we start showing our guests coming up. We used to do this with Gene and Rinaldi when they were with us, because they were always there and they always got in the shot. Pretty soon we're going to start showing those coming up on the show. You know, Bill Belichick, we're going to take the live shot right there, and Pete will be right there and getting some FaceTime on the show like that too. That's a
I need to know who's going to get the Holy Cross job, right?
Well, and you know what else, guys? Taylor and Sarah had a delightful dinner on Thursday night with Pete and Kate. Jess Sims and Michelle Rosenhaus, who produced the show this week. We had a great time. Pete treated, so which dispels all of the rumors about his arms not reaching into his pants pockets. So, you know, he's in fact arms are in fact long enough to get to his wallet. So I
pay my debts,
that,
man. Catholic guilt's a powerful driver. I pay my debts, but we did have a nice time. Appreciated you coming over. It was a lot of fun to have Kate sort of see our dysfunctional road family 15 weeks into the season and how we do it. But yeah, it was good. It was great. Great restaurant. There may have been some division at the table over who was rooting for who in the Patriots-Steelers game. Reese, like the good host he is, wanted the future guest picker to win the game, so he'd be in a good mood.
Yeah.
I was perhaps erring on the side of wanting Drake May in New England. So wouldn't have been disappointed if Mr. Tomlin and the boys snuck in a late score or two and kept the Patriots atop of Tankathon, which I Google once a week to see where the Patriots draft order is. So yeah, it was good. Good backdrop listening to Kirk and Al while we had a bite to eat. And don't think for a second, Taylor, that Reese didn't when this was so our bet over Texas making the playoff. Our listeners would remember that. So I wanted to pay
hook
it off immediately.
Hook them.
Yeah, I wanted to pay it off immediately because I also have to pay off the steak bet. Reese and I are gonna pony up for Stanford Steve, who's probably eyeing like an 130-ounce Wagyu ribeye somewhere in Los Angeles.
There are plans underway. I don't know if I'm supposed to say them yet. But this would be great. There's a
we're efforting some sort of solution here, no matter where we land. Go ahead.
Okay, so there is a we'll land someplace, but maybe do the podcast from a renowned steakhouse in the Southern California area that might have a competition among Rose Bowl teams prior to that they've done for years and years. Have you ever been to that, Pete?
I've never been. I've obviously read about it before, and I do think it is like a cool tradition in that in the 50s that must have been awesome to see those guys. So, the dudes show up from Michigan and pound a bunch of meat in Los Angeles. But yeah, Lowry's is still rock and rolling. I don't think I've ever eaten at a Lowry's, to be honest, but I do love steak. I do love maybe the fact that this is a promotional thing. It'll save me and Reese from reaching into our wallets to
if we do that, Steve's going to insist that we do it again and do it once where we actually have to pay for it, which would be great.
That's fair. Steve's good company. We'll go to Steve as much as we can.
Yeah. No, that was it was a really fun weekend. And you mentioned the escape. I had some family thing I need to get back for. I like to stay for the games. I didn't get to stay this week, but I had to. I was asking Boston expert Pete, am I going to make my flight? And made it with ease, thanks to Stephen Hensler, who was another one of the runners on loan to us this week. He's with me all the time in College Game Day basketball, but was on loan to us this week from the SEC Nation. He got me to the airport. Great job. Henny, a great Dolphins fan, so he was feeling himself on the way over talking about the Dolphins. So, but about to, I believe because of he's about to move to your neck of the woods. So I was teasing him and said, don't get used to December days like this. This is not how it usually is, because that was a beautiful, perfect day for football.
It was
and
60
for everything.
On Saturday here.
It was
like,
amazing.
We went to the park.
What a great day.
It's been good. It's raining. It's literally turning as we speak. It's rained. It was in the 60s when we woke up today, and by the end of the day, it's going to be gray, 37, and misting. Just like we like it here in November. Take all your optimism back south with you.
nothing wrong with that. So, what are you looking forward to as we wrap up this edition before we get to the playoff? Any particular bowl game that you're looking forward to seeing?
Good question. So I am a huge advocate generally of the buffet of bowls that we're about to embrace. And I love a good like Tuesday afternoon, December 26th, Bowling Green, Minnesota game being on TV. They are great ways to excuse yourself from your family, who you may have had enough time with at that point, and just go in and veg. So for the early bowl games, the most fun game as I scroll through here that I'm looking forward to is Arizona Oklahoma. You're going to have a different OU team, obviously, at quarterback, and you're going to get a glimpse of the future with Jackson Arnold. And then you have an Arizona team that completely outkicked its coverage this year, maybe more than any team in the country in terms of, I don't know what their win total was going into the year and what it ended up. But
it wasn't 8.5. I can guarantee you that.
It was not 8.5. Yeah. It was probably 4.5.
Probably. Yeah.
So, I'm looking forward to seeing Noah Fifita, who I think is one of the breakout players in the entire sport this year, go up against a bit of a higher class program. To see where they can stand. I feel like that's a really good matchup, and it will be a classic test. The bowl fundamental bowl tension isn't offense versus defense. It isn't special teams matchups. It is motivated versus unmotivated.
Yep, absolutely.
And Arizona will be motivated. If we had to do a motivation rankings, I would say Arizona would be, you know, obviously outside the playoff, a top five motivated program. You know, it's a shame. Like Oregon State, Notre Dame should be an awesome, awesome game, right? But just Oregon State's roster is just in tatters right now. It's just, you know, again, this is the world we signed up for. I'm not going to bemoan the complaints, but you'd like, if both those teams were full strength, boy, would that be some fun, right? Boy, would that be some fun to see. And then we're starting to veer into the a little bit of higher class games here. I guess opening weekend, Reese, right? We have the Georgia Southern, Ohio, Myrtle Beach Bowl. We have Jacksonville State, Louisiana in the New Orleans Bowl. R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl, I should say.
Yes.
Miami of Ohio, App State in the Cure Bowl. And then New Mexico State. For, like, that's a good day of football. But I will probably, like, clear out for UCLA Boise. Be really curious, like, of that day, be really curious to see Spencer Danielson now that he's the full-time coach. Their roster has pretty much stayed intact. Their really good tailback has announced that he's coming back. Help me with the name, Reese.
Ashton Dente.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, UCLA, you assume back how they, now Talon Green's in the portal for Boise. So everything, you know, there will be a little bit of ham and egg in there and a little bit of improv, but I think that's a pretty good game, and there will be some motivated versus unmotivated at play there.
Hey, let me ask you this, because one of the questions when we did the portal segment on game day Saturday, you know, sort of laying out for people what the rules are, when you can be immediately eligible, mm-hmm. and Kirk was fascinated by the concept of a guy being in the portal but still playing.
Yes.
I confess that I don't know the answer to this. You said Talon Green's in the portal. Is that a done deal? Is he gone? Is he going to play? What?
I don't expect him to play. I don't know that definitively. I would think 95% of the players in the portal don't play.
Right.
That would be my unscientific, anecdotal analysis of that. But there are guys that, you know, it has to sort of take a détente between coaching staff and player, and it's usually at a unique position.
Yeah.
So, the fact that it's a first semester bowl maybe changes that a little bit, and I will double check that today, actually.
Yeah,
but a lot of times those guys are going on visits that weekend too.
Right. Yeah, that's a you know, that's a tough thing, but you know, I know you know, Lou Holtz always used to talk about how if you lose a bowl game, you go back to the hotel, nobody's happy, feels like the season, you know, has been ruined, and most of the time, you know, especially once Lou got to Notre Dame, the bowl games he was playing in had national championship significance, so you understand that. But for some of these teams for whom a bowl game is what it was intended to be when they first started, a reward for a season, you know, there's a different feel to it. These games are, in fact, and I don't mean this to diminish them because I love them, I watch them, but they are exhibition games. And I would like to think that if I were a head coach at one of these programs, that I would completely use this to get guys extra reps, to take a look at people that I hope to be able to count on the next season, not necessarily totally at the expense of the guys who got you there, but I would broaden my rotation quite a bit and treat it for what it is. Now, there are exceptions. I know a lot of 6-6 teams don't want to finish 6-7. Well, none of them do, but you know what I mean. The stigma of a losing season might skew this view a little bit, but generally speaking, I would use it as not just the practice, but the game itself as extra spring practice. And I would be liberal and how, you know, how I would substitute and who I would play and just the entire approach to it. And because this is what it is. And I know bowl people get upset with it, but there has never been a time in the history of the sport that the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl had any impact on the national championship. You've already won, either won your league or earned the right to be in this bowl game. So now I would use it to build. That's easy for me to say. I get it. And you don't want to take away a reward from the players who've played the most and who've gotten you there. But I think it's a great opportunity to work a lot of young guys in different areas and maybe, if nothing else, get their feet really wet in game experience. And I'll be interested to see, as we embark on this new playoff era, the expanded playoff era, where by definition, there's going to be an even greater line of demarcation between playoff and other bowl games, if you start to see teams use this a little differently than they have in the past and not rely totally on trying to get motivation versus unmotivation or not motivated, because nothing is more motivating to a player than the bench or getting off of the bench. You know, and if they know there's that opportunity, if I go show out in this game, look, I'm going to get some reps in this game, there's an opportunity to really be in the mix the following season.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And you've seen quotes from coaches saying, "Hey, we're gonna play everybody. We're gonna do that." And for a lot of ways for reserves who coaches want to keep in the program to develop, it's a little bit of a carrot, a little bit of tease. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is how we're gonna use you. This is what it's gonna look like. Hey, this is what you need to work on. Now again, that's easy to say in a December 8th press conference, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a little trickier when it's like, oh, it's 3rd and 4. We could really use a stop here against whoever. So it will take some discipline from the coaches to practice what they have preached. But I think for fans too, especially with a lot of guys opting out, your high-end NFL guys, it gives a chance for fans to get excited. Hey, man, that redshirt sophomore linebacker we have is pretty good.
Yeah,
And it's a way to sort of market what you can be to your fan base. So I think we'll see a good amount of that, Reese, coming up here.
Pete, really fun season of College Game Day. The shows in the college football playoff surrounding them, they're awesome. They're fun. They're highly viewed, but the feel is different. For sure. So great season. Can't thank you enough for everything you did for the show this year. Just phenomenal work on all fronts. And this has been fun. And we're gonna continue this as we did last year throughout. But so it's been great,
our listeners,
man,
aren't gonna be able to shake us. We'll still be in the off season. The draft. Yeah. A little bit of hoops in March.
Yeah, you got to get me that Senior Bowl schedule, because I'm going to try to get down there or over there for a day around my basketball schedule at least. So
okay.
I'll have to look at what days you being the Senior Bowl expert that you are would tell me which, you know, if I roll up in there on a Wednesday and there's no reason to be there on a Wednesday, it's not a good day. That's the
Correct.
Kind of thing you're going to have to guide me on and let me know which days would be best to see if I can make that happen around my basketball schedule.
We will walk you through. Major Applewhite, the OC at South Alabama, took me to an awesome restaurant with unbelievable oysters. The oysters in Mobile are fantastic. So you will. We'll have to have a Mobile bet at some point during postseason. I think we'll have some sort of disagreement that leads to a friendly oyster wager. So.
Probably it might center around Caleb Williams and Drake May, but I don't know.
It could.
I can't.
It could. I've already got some meals on that.
Yeah. No, I can't. I can't. Actually, as much as I mean, I love both of them. I think they're both. I think what I've said in the past, I need to clarify a little bit more. I think I've sort of thrown out the term generational talent. What I should say is generational prospect. That's more precise, I think, in the language. I do think that both of them have the chance to be like franchise cornerstone superstar guys, you know, who can elevate everybody around them. Every quarterback needs the right personnel, right system, right coach. Every quarterback who's ever lived needs that. But there are a few who can take a lot of different ones and elevate them. I think both of those guys are that type of prospect. Now, whether they do it, you know, there's a certain crapshoot to that, no matter how talented you are. But I think both are phenomenal. But I think Caleb goes first. So I'm not going to bet you on that one just yet.
All right. I have a Caleb 1-2 bet with McAfee, I think, actually.
Yeah.
So.
I think you do. I think
yeah.
you do. Thanks
I'll
for everything.
I'll cash that in at the combine.
Yeah, that's right.
No,
well, we
won't be done yet.
We're ahead of ourselves. We've got Pasadena. We may have steak at Pasadena. We've got plenty to talk about with the bowls leading up to the college football playoff. We'll continue on the pod doing that. Thanks for listening. We encourage you to subscribe to the podcast and download wherever you prefer to get your podcast.